A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's follow-up to yesterday's meningitis episode is about lip reading. He heard Herman mention a cousin who learned it after losing hearing in one ear, and he's been turning it over since. Is it actually learnable, or is it one of those movie skills that doesn't hold up? Daniel picked up on that detail from the meningitis episode, and it sent him down a whole path. He's been wondering about lip reading ever since, and his question this week is sort of three questions stacked under one umbrella. Is lip reading actually a learnable skill? Or is it one of those things that looks real in films but falls apart in practice?
So today we're going to take lip reading seriously. As a skill, as a tool, and as a slightly paranoid fantasy about what powerful people are saying in cars.
And third, the part I think he enjoyed writing most. Do public figures ever deliberately say inane things? His phrase was mutterings about cabbage and onion, just to throw off anyone watching their lips. Speech reading is lips, plus face, plus gesture, plus context, plus whatever residual hearing you have. The lips are maybe a third of the input.
And that third is lossy in a way most people don't appreciate. Only about 30 to 40% of speech sounds are visible on the lips at all. The rest happen behind the teeth, at the back of the throat, in the nasal cavity. And a huge number of the sounds you can see look identical to each other, P, B, and M. You can't tell them apart by watching a mouth. They all look like a closed lip release, so right away the ceiling isn't 100%. And I should say up front, the term lip reading is a little bit like calling surgery cutting. It's not wrong, but it undersells what's actually happening. The clinical term is speech reading, and the distinction matters.
Which is why the cabbage and onions question is actually more interesting than it sounds. Daniel asked whether a head of state might mutter nonsense to throw off lip readers. But the thing is, nonsense is harder to speech read than sense. If someone says something predictable, your brain can scaffold it. If someone says something about cabbage and onions with no context, there's nothing to grab onto.
And it's the thing most people get backwards. They assume lip readers are these superhuman decoders who can extract meaning from any mouth movement. Right. And the pop culture version, the spy across the room with binoculars decoding every word through a window, that's the narrow version with impossible accuracy. That's the one that doesn't exist.
So, before we get to heads of state and cabbage, let's talk about what's actually happening when someone reads lips. What does the visual signal actually contain?
Less than people assume. The core problem is something called the viseme. A phoneme is the smallest unit of sound that distinguishes meaning, like the difference between pat and bat. A viseme is the visual equivalent, the mouth shape that corresponds to a group of sounds. And here's the problem. Multiple phonemes map to a single viseme. The sounds p, b, and m are all made by pressing the lips together. They look identical.
Which means visual speech isn't a backup channel. It's part of the same perceptual system. Your brain is always combining what it sees with what it hears, even if you've never thought about it. So pat, bat, and mat are the same word on the lips.
And it gets worse. The sounds coo and goo are made at the back of the mouth, the velum. The tongue movement is almost invisible. So cat and gat, if gat were a word, look the same. The standard estimate is that only about 30 to 40% of speech sounds are visually distinguishable. The rest are what linguists call homophonous, same face, same look, especially in situations where the good ear is on the wrong side of the conversation.
That's a detail people don't think about. If you're deaf in your left ear and someone's standing on your left, you hear almost nothing from them. You have to turn your head, reposition, or watch their face. Miriam would have learned very early to angle herself in conversations, so the good ear was toward the speaker and the eyes were on the mouth.
She spent about 2 years actively working on it after the hearing loss. And the thing is, she was a child, which matters enormously. Miriam had already acquired language, so she wasn't starting from zero. They do. If you mouth elephant juice at someone, most people will read it as I love you. It's a party trick, but it's also a perfect illustration of the ambiguity problem.
So learnability depends heavily on when you start and why you're learning. For someone like Miriam, speech reading is a skill that develops because it has to. It's not a party trick. It's a lifeline.
And that's the distinction I want to keep pulling on. There are really two different practices here, and they get conflated constantly. The McGurk effect is the single best piece of evidence that visual speech isn't a separate channel from auditory speech. It's integrated at a very low level. You play a sound, the syllable ba, and you pair it with a video of a person saying ga.
Let's stay on the assistive side for a bit. What does training actually look like? Is there a curriculum, or do you just watch people talk and get better?
There are formal training programs. Hearing loss organizations have developed structured courses. They typically start with teaching you which sounds are visible and which aren't. That's the key insight. We're all lip-reading all the time, just below conscious awareness. If you've ever struggled to understand someone at a loud party and then turned to look at their face and suddenly the word snapped into focus, that's visual speech integration doing its job.
So it's not like learning a language. It's more like learning to read a very lossy compression format. You're reconstructing the original signal from a fraction of the data.
The outcomes vary enormously. Some people become quite good, enough to follow a familiar speaker in good lighting with known context. Other people work at it for years and never get past maybe 30 or 40% comprehension. The honest answer is yes, but with a significant asterisk. There was a review published in the American Journal of Audiology a few years back, Bernstein and colleagues, that looked at the training literature. And the finding was that training does produce measurable gains. People who practice speech reading get better at it, but the gains are modest and they plateau.
And the cognitive load is the part I think is underappreciated. You're not just watching a mouth. You're running a constant prediction engine in your head. What word would make sense here? What's the topic? So it's learnable in the sense that chess is learnable. You can get better, but you're never going to see the whole board.
There's a developmental angle too. Children with hearing loss often acquire speech reading implicitly, the way hearing children acquire spoken language. They don't take lessons. They just watch faces constantly, and their brains wire themselves to extract maximum information from the visual channel. That's different from an adult who loses hearing later in life and has to learn the skill deliberately.
So that's the assistive picture. Real, learnable, useful, but bounded. Now let's get to the part Daniel actually wants to talk about. The motorcade. The head of state getting rushed into a car while someone with binoculars tries to read their lips.
The question is whether there's really someone attempting to decode what a head of state said in that moment. And the answer is, it depends on what you mean by someone. In security contexts, there are people whose job involves trying to extract information from video, but they're rarely doing live lip reading in the way a movie would show it. It's more likely to be after the fact, frame by frame, with multiple analysts looking at the same footage and arguing about what they're seeing.
And the reason it's after the fact is that live lip reading of a moving target at distance is nearly impossible. The person is walking, the head is turning, the mouth is partially obscured, the lighting is inconsistent. You need a stable, well-lit front-on view of the face. A motorcade gives you none of that.
People who rely on speech reading report genuine exhaustion after long conversations. It's the difference between walking on a paved path and walking on a tightrope. Same direction, very different energy cost. It's that it's rarely the dramatic, decisive thing people imagine. A lip reader might be asked to look at footage and give a best guess about what was said. That guess would then be treated as one data point among many, not as a transcript.
Now let's talk about who's actually using this skill in the wild, and for what.
The assistive side is the most straightforward. People with hearing loss use speech reading constantly, often without thinking about it. But there's also a professional tier. There are people who get paid to transcribe speech from video when there's no audio. And this is where Daniel's heads of state question gets interesting.
Because the fantasy is that there's someone with a telescope lens aimed at the president's mouth as he walks to the car, decoding every word. And the reality is both more mundane and more complicated. You see them leaning in close, turning away from the cameras, using their hands to shield their faces. That's not cabbage and onions. That's just basic awareness that a camera can capture more than audio.
And the key detail is that they work from high-quality footage. Good resolution, good lighting, a clear angle on the face. They're not decoding grainy phone video from across a street. In 2018, a lip reader was quoted in the press claiming to have deciphered a private conversation she had at a public event. It was widely reported, and the accuracy was disputed. The lip reader gave a version of what was said. Right. The claim you sometimes see is that a good lip reader can achieve 80% accuracy. But that number, when it's cited at all, is for controlled conditions with known context.
Which brings us to the forensic question. How reliable is lip reading when you're trying to decipher video after the fact? And the answer is, not very. This is where the viral video problem comes in. We've all seen clips of politicians or celebrities, supposedly caught saying something outrageous, and the caption says something like, "Lip reader reveals what the president really said."
And the courts agree. Forensic lip reading isn't generally accepted as standalone evidence. It's considered too error-prone, too context-dependent, too subjective. And often wrong. The incentive structure is completely backwards. A viral video needs a juicy quote. The juicier the quote, the more engagement. So there's enormous pressure to produce a transcript that's interesting, not one that's accurate.
There was a period where police in the UK were using lip readers to try to interpret CCTV footage of suspects. It produced some leads, but it also produced some spectacular errors. The same vis-a-vis ambiguity that makes Elephant Juice and I Love You indistinguishable is what makes it possible to read almost anything into a politician's lip movements if you try hard enough.
And once a transcript is out there, it's very hard to correct. The correction never travels as far as the original claim. So you get this situation where a fabricated or heavily edited lip-reading transcript becomes the accepted version of what someone said, and no amount of debunking dislodges it.
So now we get to the cabbage and onion question. Daniel's hypothetical is that a head of state, aware that lip readers might be watching, deliberately says something inane to throw them off. Is there any evidence this actually happens? The famous system is LipNet from 2016, which claimed very high accuracy on a constrained dataset. The model was trained on videos of people speaking known sentences in controlled conditions, and it got quite good at those sentences.
If you're having a private conversation in public and you don't want anyone reading your lips, you put your hand over your mouth. That's basic tradecraft. But the deliberate nonsense utterance, the cabbage and onion strategy, that's more of a cultural trope than a documented practice.
Which is interesting, because the trope persists for a reason. The fantasy that someone might be decoding your private mutterings is compelling. It speaks to a deeper anxiety about legibility. We want to believe that our private moments could be read by someone skilled enough, and simultaneously we want to believe we could defeat that reading with a simple trick.
The cabbage and onion thing is a defensive fantasy. It's the idea that you can opt out of surveillance by being absurd, and it's appealing because it suggests the watchers are powerful but also easily fooled. You don't have to change your behavior, just your content. Say something meaningless and the decoder's skill is neutralized. And a plausible-looking transcript is more dangerous than no transcript at all, because it carries the weight of apparent precision.
The watcher just transcribes cabbage and onion, or more likely, transcribes something juicier and claims you said that instead. Real-time captioning, speech reading aids, augmented reality glasses that overlay text on the world. That's the positive version. The same underlying capability, pointed at a human need instead of a security problem.
They stop having private conversations in public. The perception of surveillance does the work that the surveillance itself can't actually do. Not necessarily sinister, but different. The tool doesn't change. The intent does.
The paranoid public figure uses the fear of speech reading to withdraw from public conversation. Same perceptual mechanism, opposite social effect. And the cabbage and onions thing is a lovely idea with almost no evidence behind it.
The forensic question. How reliable is it when people try to decipher video after the fact? The answer is, not reliable enough to trust on its own. It's a tool for generating hypotheses, not for establishing facts.
At the distance, those videos are usually shot, with the angle and the motion and the obstruction. The visual signal is nearly useless. So, a lip reader in a quiet room with a familiar speaker and a known topic can do remarkably well. A lip reader looking at grainy footage of a stranger saying something unexpected is basically guessing.
The idea that someone is extracting full sentences from that scenario is fantasy. And the brain fills in the rest using everything it knows about the speaker, the situation, the language, the topic. That's what makes it work. and that's what makes it fail.
The McGurk effect is the cleanest demonstration of this. The brain doesn't just combine inputs, it actively constructs perception. And when the inputs conflict, the construction can be wrong. A lip reader is doing the same thing, just with more uncertainty and less acoustic signal.
That's why the cabbage and onions idea is so funny to me. The person muttering nonsense is actually making the lip reader's job harder, not easier. If a leader says something predictable, the lip reader has a chance. If they say something about cabbage and onions, the lip reader is lost. There's no context to scaffold the guess.
Do public figures say cabbage and onion to throw off lip readers? No verified cases, but the fantasy is revealing.
The assistive use case is the one that actually matters. My cousin Miriam isn't a spy. She's a woman who watches television with the sound low because she's learned to extract meaning from faces in a way that supplements her remaining hearing.
That's the whole thing in one sentence. The skill is real, the limits are real, and the clever workaround isn't clever at all.
Where does the AI stuff go from here? I think the interesting question is whether machine lip reading can ever escape the same constraints that limit human lip reading. The 30-40% ceiling on visible speech sounds is a physical fact. The McGurk effect shows that we're all already reading lips all the time without knowing it. The question isn't whether lip reading is real, it's whether we can accept that it's real but limited.
That's the uncomfortable part. We want the superpower. We want the code breaker. We don't want the tired person at the dinner party straining to follow a conversation. The audio, if there's any, gets better at being cleaned up and enhanced. The lip reading itself doesn't improve. The surrounding inference does.
That's where the forensic use case gets interesting. A system that combines lip reading with audio enhancement, with language modeling, with speaker identification, might eventually produce transcripts that are good enough to be useful. But useful isn't the same as reliable, and reliable isn't the same as admissible in court.
The courts have been slow to accept a lot of forensic technologies. Bite mark analysis, hair analysis, even fingerprint analysis has been challenged. Lip reading is nowhere near that threshold. The error rate is just too high, and the variability between analysts is too great.
The stakes are higher than people think. A wrong transcript can send an investigation in the wrong direction. It can put words in someone's mouth that they never said. It can create evidence out of noise. That's the danger of treating a hypothesis as a fact.
The future is probably not a lip-reading breakthrough that suddenly makes everyone readable. It's more likely to be a gradual improvement in the surrounding context. Better cameras, better audio, better language models. The lips will still only give 30-40%. The rest will come from everywhere else.
The incentive was to make it juicy. And it's coming faster than the surveillance version.
Because the assistive version has a cooperative speaker. The person you're talking to wants to be understood. They're facing you, speaking clearly, in a known context. The surveillance version has an uncooperative subject. You were manufacturing the viral videos before viral videos existed.
Daniel's question about the motorcade. Is someone trying to decode what the head of state said? Maybe. But they're probably not very good at it, and they're probably not relying on it. The real intelligence comes from other sources. Lip reading is a garnish, not the main course.
The cabbage and onions thing. I love the image of a world leader standing by a car muttering about root vegetables to confuse a lip reader. But the reality is probably more boring. They just turn away. Or they don't say anything important in public. The boring explanation is usually right.
That's the thing about operational security. It's not dramatic, it's just disciplined. Don't say sensitive things where cameras can see your mouth. That's the whole strategy. No vegetables required.
The misconception at the heart of this episode. What's the most common wrong belief about lip reading?
Did anyone ever call the station to complain? The brain guesses the rest, and the guess is only as good as the context.
The corollary. That forensic lip reading is reliable enough to be used as evidence. It's not. It's highly error-prone, and the courts know it.
Which leaves us with the open question. If AI lip reading keeps improving, will it ever be reliable enough for forensic use? And if public figures know they might be lip-read, will they change how they speak in public? I think the first question is probably no, at least not on its own. The second question is already happening. People cover their mouths. They turn away. The awareness is there.
The deep attention. Speech reading is a lifeline for people with hearing loss. It's also a tool that can be misused or overtrusted. The same skill, pointed in different directions. That's the thing I keep coming back to.
You're both right about the mechanism, but you've got the skill wrong. I've written it about 40 times, never sent it, he probably doesn't remember, or maybe he does. Either way, the apology would be for me, not for him. I sat in a booth and tried to read lips on crowd footage when the audio was unusable, paid in sandwiches from the cafeteria. I was terrible at it. He kept the job 2 years. The dynamic is older than the VCR. Somebody wants a quote, somebody provides one. Whether it was said or not is a secondary concern. I can still lip read, by the way. But only if the person is saying cabbage and onion. I spent 3 hours once trying to decipher a single sentence from a man with a gold tooth. Never got it. The sentence was probably about a bus schedule, because that's the phrase I practiced with. My sister and I used to sit across from each other and mouth words. She'd do cabbage and onion, and I'd guess. It was the only phrase I could get right every time. The bilabial sounds are easy. The rest of it's just guessing.
You convinced yourself the binoculars were special because of a sticker you applied yourself.
That's the joke, isn't it? The only thing I can reliably lip-read is the thing designed to defeat lip-reading.
The confidence mattered more than the glass.
The lesson is that concealment doesn't work. If someone wants to put words in your mouth, they'll put them there whether you said cabbage or onion or the entire periodic table. The lips are ambiguous enough to accommodate any transcript. Because the audio was unusable. There was nothing to check against.
Which is exactly the forensic problem. The transcript looks authoritative because it's written down, but it's a guess. And the guess was made by a man with a sticker on his binoculars.
The sticker was the most honest part of the whole operation. It said lip reading. That's what I was doing. Guessing.
The gold tooth detail is interesting. It's a variable nobody thinks about. Dental work is a confounding factor in speech reading. The visual signal gets disrupted by reflective surfaces in the mouth.
It's the kind of thing that would never show up in the formal literature. The studies use clean video of people with normal teeth. The real world has gold teeth and missing teeth and dental work that catches the light. The gap between the lab and the street is enormous.
That's television. That's also the internet now. Same thing. Faster.
The scale question. You're saying this kind of thing is more common than we suggested. Not the dramatic motorcade decoding, but the mundane, low-stakes guessing at what someone said on video.
Every local news station had someone like me. Maybe not with the title, but someone who looked at the footage and said, "I think he said this," and the producer wrote it down. And it went on air. Nobody called it lip-reading. They called it context. But it was the same thing, watching a mouth and guessing.
As video resolution improves and AI lip-reading gets better, the accuracy problem will shrink but never disappear. The VSEMs are still ambiguous. The incentives will still push toward the juicy quote.
Most of it. In my experience, the audio's bad, the mouth's unclear, the producer's in a hurry. You write down what makes sense, and what makes sense is what you'd have said in that situation.
The open question is whether we'll get better at accepting uncertainty, or whether we'll just get better at manufacturing certainty. I suspect the latter.
That's right. The man with the gold tooth. I decided he was talking about a bus schedule because he looked like a man who took the bus. That's not evidence. That's me.
That's the thing the courts understand. The transcript is contaminated by the transcriber. You can't separate the observation from the observer.
The scale is wrong in the other direction. It's not a rare, exotic skill used by intelligence agencies. It's a mundane, widespread practice used by local news stations, and anyone who's ever tried to figure out what someone said in a noisy video.
Everyone does it. You watch a video with bad audio, and you read the lips without thinking. Your brain does it automatically, the McGurk thing. You're all doing it right now. You just don't call it lip reading.
That's the point we should land on. Speech reading isn't a special skill that some people have and others don't. It's a universal human capacity that some people develop to a higher degree. The difference between Miriam and a random person on the street is training and necessity, not a different kind of brain.
The difference between a forensic lip reader and a man with a sticker on his binoculars is mostly confidence. The skill is the same. The context is different. The stakes are different. But the fundamental act is the same. Watching a mouth and guessing.
Where does that leave us? Lip reading is real. It's learnable. It's useful. It's also limited, error-prone, and easily overtrusted. The same skill that helps Miriam navigate a dinner party can produce a false transcript that sends an investigation sideways. The tool doesn't care how you use it.
The future is probably more of the same. Better AI, better cameras, better language models. But the fundamental limit is physical. The lips don't carry enough information. Everything else is inference, and inference is always a guess.
The open question I'm left with is whether the AI systems will ever be honest about that. A human lip reader knows they're guessing. A machine produces a transcript with a confidence score and it looks like fact. The danger is that we trust the machine's confidence more than we should.
The counter-surveillance question. If public figures know they might be lip-read, will they change how they speak in public? The answer is yes, and they already have. They cover their mouths. They turn away. They save the important conversations for rooms without cameras. The boring answer wins again.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the egg salad intel.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review. It helps other people find the show. And if you have a weird prompt, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.